The exorcist Ronnie from the Philippines is on the case once again. This time he tracks Lucifer, Lord of Hell, to a local middle school. And then we take a look at a true crime story that at this very moment I'm still debating whether or not I actually want to tell you. But it's Cursed Episodes Week, so it must be done. It's a true crime story with no moral, no lesson, no happy ending. It's just the story of two men, one woman, and a mobile home full of blood. Today on Dead Rabbit Radio. Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of Dead Rabbit Radio. I'm your host, Jason Carpenter. I'm having a great day. Hope you guys are having a great day too. We got a ton of stuff to cover. You guys are like, no. Do a longer intro. I don't want you to get to that last story. I'm going to tell you guys right now, I don't really do much gore on this podcast. I actually censor a lot of stuff. Not this episode. So the first story is fine. The first story is a nice little jaunt back to the Philippines. But the second story is pretty bloody. So let's welcome in one of our legacy Patreons here. I'm going to have to make it up to him again. He's all like, just kind of, damn it, he's kind of being ushered in by the Dead Rabbit goons. It's Reverend Samuel. Everyone give a round of applause to Reverend Samuel, one of our many resident musicians. I'll put his music video in the show notes. The Corona Queen, I think what it was called. It's kind of a jaunty little tune. I've used the word jaunty twice so far this podcast. Come on in, Reverend. He's being strapped down to a gurney, but then there's like colorful balloons all around him to keep his mood high. He's like, man, this episode, I'll make it up to you, Reverend. Reverend Samuel, you're going to be our captain, our pilot this episode. If you guys can't support the Patreon, or if you don't want to listen to this episode, that's fine too. Just help spread the word about the show. Really, really helps out a lot. You know what? Actually, let's use Reverend Samuel's custom vehicle, the Corona Queen, from his music video. We'll get all on board. We all have the coronavirus now. We are leaving behind. He left. He took the hair hang glider. He's going his own way. We are taking the Corona Queen. We are headed out to the Philippines. That's exactly how his song sounds. I did a perfect rendition of their song. No, check out their music video. It's really cool. He made it himself because of our last 90-day challenge. Yesterday, I ran out of time. I wanted to go more into the adventures of the exorcist in the Philippines, Ronnie E. Ablong, but I ran out of time. So I saved this one. This will be our opening story for today. I find this really fascinating. We take the Corona Queen to the Philippines. We spend 2 weeks in quarantine because we told them the name of our boat. Reverend Samuel rescues us in the end, a daring raid. We're now walking around the Philippines, and we are going to meet Ronnie E. Ablong. Specifically, we're going to spy on him. So we're hiding in the bushes, and we're looking through a window, and he's sitting there with his logbook, and he's writing stuff down. Very noisy pen. Very, very noisy pen. He wrote this. He didn't need a logbook. He actually posted this on Facebook. I just like spying in bushes. Like, Jason, you weirdo. You can just go to his Facebook page and read this post. I'm going to read it to you. This might be one of the most... If this story is true, there's a big asterisk to this one, right? If this story is true, it could have implications for us all. Here we go. Case number one. I don't know if this is actually his first case or the first case he put on Facebook. If this was his first case, he did list it as case number one, then he has an amazing career in front of him. This is the first thing he ever... He's like, oh, I'm a brand new exorcist. What's on the docket today? This? Oh, dude, he's plucked... He's basically Sam and Dean rolled into one. Here we go. Case one. I'm going to read right from his case file. A female junior high school student... She came once or twice a month for exorcism session. I didn't know. I bet you didn't know it was that casual. That was shocking to me. I didn't know. It was like, you're possessed by a bunch of demons. They're like, so how many times would you like to see me this week? I don't know. Once or twice a month. Oh, yeah. I'm sure the demons in charge of your body will be totally fine with that lackadaisical schedule. I thought they strap you down to a bed and just like yelled at you for a couple hours. So does Thursday work for you? No. I'm going to be perverting mankind. Oh, okay. How about Saturday? A female junior high school student. She came once or twice a month for exorcism session. She was possessed by Lucifer. You definitely need more than one or two sessions a month. And it's Lucifer. It's the Lord of Hell. Let me continue. Once during the duration of her case, she didn't return for almost 3 months. I thought the case was over. But one day she returned. So, Lucifer has possessed the young girl. And Ronnie is seen here once or twice a month. Loses track of Lucifer for 3 months and goes, oh, I guess she's cured. You don't think that Lucifer is actually just not going to the appointments anymore? The Lord of Lies isn't just really good at making up excuses? If you knew someone in your neighborhood, no, scratch that. If you knew someone that you had a responsibility towards was possessed by Lucifer and you just stopped seeing them, you don't know where they're at. You are going to assume they are wreaking vengeance across the planet. You're not going to say, I guess she's cured. I guess everything's totally fine. But one day she returned. Upon inquiry of what happened, she told me that after our last session, she no longer felt the presence of Lucifer or his minions. So actually, I'm wrong. I should have kept reading it, but I read this. So he did cure her. All it takes to get Lucifer, a mortal enemy of the Almighty God, out of a junior high school girl once or twice a month. That's all they should. That's basically the movie The Exorcist lied to us. They should have just stopped by the house. That was like Pazuzu. That wasn't even like a top level demon. We're talking about Lucifer here, the light bringer, once or twice a month. That's crazy. If you are currently seeing a therapist, next time you see that therapist, go, you know what? I'm changing this to once or twice a month because that's all it took for Lucifer. And they're like, sir, this is a court ordered therapist. You can't just change your appointments. Ta-ta for now. See you in 3 months. Don't actually do that. But my point is that apparently Lucifer once or twice a month, totally fine. So why is she back? Why is she back? Well, let me keep reading here. But one evening her parents quarreled. At the height of their arguments, her father shouted, "Oh, devil!" So if you didn't listen to yesterday's episode, Ronnie E. believes that just by stating the names of demons, you can bring them into your life. And some of you guys probably didn't listen to it because I said, at the end of this episode, I'm going to start saying demon names because I have to tell the story. And it's a cursed episode. All the episodes this week are cursed. So he believes that just by saying, "Oh, devil," the devil will show up. Now, I remember, you know, I grew up in the church. My dad was a Southern Baptist minister when I was growing up. We weren't super, like, we weren't super religious. My dad was a minister. But my dad, I think I've told this story before. My dad, when he joined the ministry, he bought a painting of an owl. And he'd hang it up in his house. And it was a really nice painting of an owl. I actually have a painting of an owl in my house as well. You guys see it on my Patreon live streams. But the reason why he actually did that for a purpose, he goes, a lot of times fundamentalist Christians, Southern Baptists, tend to be very superstitious, and they see the owl as a symbol of evil and demonic activity, so he bought that picture as he's growing horns and his eyes turn into slits. No, he goes, because that's stupid. It's a picture of an owl, and owls are God's creatures. That's dumb. That's stupid to be afraid of an owl. So I'm going to buy an owl and put it in an actual owl. There's owls flying everywhere. Ah! I had a very, very crazy childhood. That's why. Where was I going? What's this episode even about? Oh, devil. So I remembered, though, hearing stuff like don't call them deviled eggs. You'll meet a Southern Baptist fundamentalist that will call them angel eggs. People won't use the term devil's food cake. I remember that. Like, my dad just be like, "Oh, so stupid." He'd go, "Fly, my owls," and the owls would come to the potluck and attack everyone. Ah, they're deviled eggs, okay? So I'm used to that. Like, I grew up, again, my family wasn't like that, but growing up into churches like that where you didn't use terms like deviled eggs or... So I get that. I totally get it. I think it's dumb. I don't believe it because people use the term... I mean, if this was the case, everyone who owned a PS2 would have been possessed. Because you couldn't own a PS2 without at least once saying Devil May Cry. But these terms are used in video games and food, obviously, and then other stuff. But people use that term all the time. So, but Ronnie E. believes just by saying these names, these people, these spirits will show up. So how did she get possessed by Lucifer again, really? That long segue about owl paintings and PS2 video games. Let me go back to this. But one evening, her parents quarreled. At the height of their arguments, her father shouted, "Oh, devil!" And the devil came. And according to these notes, according to case file number one, and the devil came and said, "Pah, anything I can do for you?" Which is awesome. The fact that he's not like this sneaky spirit, like possessing their daughter. He actually showed up with a bunch of smoke and I imagine a top hat and he tips it. "Anything I can do for you?" And he sounds like a demonic Urkel. The case file continues. And she was possessed again after that. Just because her dad said, "Oh, devil." And Lucifer appears. "Anything I can do for you?" So that's that. That's that story. That happened, apparently. She was possessed for another 2 years, but look on the bright side, that's only 24 to 48 visits. You'll be fine. You'll be totally fine, young lady. Why would devil want to possess? That seemed like be the most inefficient person to possess. A junior high school student. He's just taking tests. What are you doing, junior high? I mean, you can get in a little bit of trouble. You can ruin her life. But, I mean, she's just like a junior high school student. We talked about this yesterday. The rest of the time, maybe she's, like, making her smoke or, like, play hooky and things like that. But the time that she's not doing that, she's, like, taking... Devil's like, "Oh, man, I know this one. I know this one. I have infinite knowledge. But this isn't the way I was taught how to do math." Why? Why? I do want to say this, though. I'm just killing time before we get to the next story. This would be an amazing sitcom. Saved by the Hell. Okay. Saved by the Hell. Here's my pitch. Satan is in high school. The principal is God. And that's all I got. That's literally all I got. I've been thinking about this for like 2 days. That's all I got. Because I don't want to get super sacrilegious and start like making jokes about religious figures. I can make jokes about God and Satan. They can take it. They can totally take it. You have God as principal. You have Satan as a student. And they're just constantly pulling pranks on each other. God's like, "Immortal misery." And Satan's like, "Oh, I'll get you next time, God." "No, you won't. I'm far more powerful than you." And it goes on and on for about 7 seasons. And then there's a movie. Only the first 3 seasons are good. But Saved by the Hell. Okay. We can no longer put this off anymore. Reverend Samuel. Trusted man of the cloth. Are you ready to call in that carpenter copter? We're leaving behind the Philippines. We are headed out to Bell, Florida. I remember back when I was in college, I had a friend. We're going to call him Michael. I just graduated high school. I was working at Mervyn's. They don't exist anymore, but it was a clothing store. I was hanging out with a couple of the people who work security at Mervyn's. Dude, and they would beat the crap out of shoplifters. They'd get in full-on fights there. Because Mervyn's did not put up with shoplifting. This was in Rancho Cordova in California, which is a relatively rough area. Anyways, I'm talking to this guy, and he tells me one time that he got in a fight with this dude at a bar. Like, they started off as an argument in the bar. They went outside. The argument turned into a fist fight. Fist fight turns into grappling. They're fighting. He goes, "I'll tell you what. We're going at it, and the next thing I know, I pop a thumb in, and I pull his eyeball out." And he goes, "I'm standing there, Jason, and I'm looking at this dude, and I don't know who this guy is, this big guy. And he's standing there, and I'm standing there, and in the palm of my hand is his eyeball. It's still attached to this dude." He's not like running away and realize, "Hey, why's my hand wet? What?" He has his hand cupped and he's holding this man's eyeball. And he goes, "I knew that I could just close my hand and pop it." And I go, "What'd you do?" And he goes, "Well, I didn't do that." He goes, "I just kind of gave it back to him." He goes, "I just kind of like let it kind of sit in my palm." And he goes, "The fight was over. The fight was over." Like, it was a very, very serious fight, but his eyeball came out. Like, that's kind of the end of it, right? My friend Michael didn't want to kill the guy. But he goes, "For a moment, the fight was so brutal. I'm holding that eyeball in the palm of my hand that I thought that I could just close my hand." But he didn't do that. The guy goes to the hospital and gets his eyeball fixed. Like, it was fine. I mean, probably didn't look great for a while. He probably joined the Black Eye Club. Mitt Romney's like, "You are now one of us. Here's your Illuminati membership." But you know, the thing with like bar community Everyone kind of knows each other. You go to the same bar, bartender knows you, all that stuff. Michael tells me, he goes, so a while later, maybe like a week or two later, he goes, the guy wanted to make it up to me because he realized that he was in the wrong to start the fight. He was in the wrong to try, because he was a bigger guy. Michael was a smaller guy. He probably just thought he could beat him up. He goes, so he invited me over to his house. He wanted to have a party. He wanted to, you know, make it up to me. And I go, oh, that's kind of cool. At least, you know, he's the bigger man and stuff like that. And Michael looks at me and he goes, I didn't go. And I go, why not? He goes, I'll never forget this. He goes, never go to a man's house after you've held his eyeball in your hand. And you might think that's a super specific, like, how often are you actually going to do that? You're like, well, I did hold his severed arm, but I didn't hold his eyeball. I'll come over. The fact of the matter was, when you beat somebody so brutally, they can never be your friend. You always have to watch your back. I remembered that lesson. I remember that lesson. I heard that story when I just graduated high school. I must have been like, I graduated early. So I was like 17, 18 years old. Very, very important lesson. When you savagely beat another human, they will never be your friend again. And you could even argue emotionally as well. Like when you just completely collapse somebody emotionally and then they're like, hey, come over, I'll make it up to you. Because he figured that this was a trap. He was going to go over to this guy's house. A bunch of the dude's buddies were going to be there and he may lose more than an eyeball. It's May 2019. We're in the town of Belle, Florida, specifically. We're at a mobile home park. Now, these mobile homes aren't parked right next to each other. It's Florida, so they seem to have pretty good space, at least on the photos that I saw. So in this motorhome yard, we're going to meet Alex Bonilla, 51-year-old man, married to a 35-year-old woman. They have three kids together. The next door mobile home, which there's still a good amount of space there, has Jimmy and his wife. They've been neighbors for around 4 years at this point, and they have kids of the same age. So their kids play with each other. And Jimmy, that's not his real name, Jimmy approaches Alex and his wife and says, hey, you know, I'm working, my wife's working, our kids are around the same age. Would you mind babysitting my kids? And Alex's wife goes, oh yeah, sure, I'll totally babysit your kids. You know, the kids just play together anyways. But one day Alex comes home from work early, and he sees Jimmy and his wife having sex. Alex, of course, is heartbroken. He's enraged. He's been betrayed by both his best friend and his wife. He tells Alex he needs to stay away from his wife. No more babysitting. That's obvious, right? Stay away from my wife. But she can still come over on Tuesdays to watch the kids. We're going to have nothing to do with you. Alex and his wife fight for a while, but they decide to reconcile. They decide that the love they have and the children they have are more important than one indiscretion. That happened in May of 2019. June 14th, 2019. Alex comes home early from work and sees Jimmy staring at his house. Alex is looking across the field and just sees Jimmy standing there, staring. He figures Jimmy is trying to see if his wife is home so they can have sex again. Alex isn't going to put up with that. He walks over to Jimmy's house and he says, you need to stay away from my wife. You need to leave her alone. Jimmy gets mad. No one tells Jimmy what to do. Jimmy, he speaks in the third person. If Jimmy wants to watch, Jimmy wants to watch. The arguing turns into a fight. Alex says, you're going to pay for what you did right now. You're going to pay for what you did. The next thing Alex knows, he's at work. When the police show up to his place of business, they ask, what's going on? And he tells the story I just told. Came home, saw Jimmy staring, got in an argument, got in a fist fight. The next thing he knew, he was at work. He quote-unquote blacked out. But the police already know what happened. They've been to Jimmy's house. Jimmy said he was doing some gardening on June 14th, 2019. He was doing some gardening. He was making breakfast for the girls. Dad stuff, right? Just dad stuff. He sees Alex staring at him from across the field. What? Oh, that weirdo. Alex walks up to Jimmy's house and is standing at the doorway. Now, Jimmy can tell, just from the way Alex is standing, he's hiding something. Not emotionally. Not like, I don't want her to know my secret crush. The fact that it looks like he has something tucked under his arm. His arms are crossed, and it looks like he's kind of concealing something. But the door's open, and Alex can just walk in. And as he steps inside, Jimmy looks, and he can tell what Alex is concealing is a pistol. Jimmy's daughter sees Alex. Uncle Alex. These people have known each other for 4 years. Their kids play together. Jimmy's oldest daughter goes running towards Alex to give him a hug. And Alex just pushes her away, pulls out the gun, and puts it right to Jimmy's head. He forces Jimmy into the bedroom of the mobile home, and he shuts the bedroom door. Alex tells Jimmy, quote, "I hate that you have a good life, and I don't." He then pulls out a 2-foot-long metal pipe he had hidden in his pants. Was this guy walking like a gingerbread man? I have no idea how he moved with a 2-foot-long... My legs are 2 feet long. Maybe longer. But the point is that's my knees aren't. I wouldn't be able to move my knees. He pulls out a 2-foot-long metal pipe and says, "I'm going to ask you a series of questions, and every time you lie, I'm going to break a bone." Jimmy knows what's coming, and he knows that he's going to start questioning him about whether or not he's still been sleeping with his wife, how many times they slept together, all of this stuff. And he's begging Alex, "Listen, just leave. Just leave. Just leave. I won't call the cops. Just leave. I've never slept with your wife again. Please, please just leave." For whatever reason, Alex then just drops the metal pipe. He's no longer going to do that gimmick. He's no longer going to play that game. He decides to move to phase 2. He has Jimmy stand up and get his hands tied behind his back. Bad move. Never get in the car. Never get tied up. And it's funny because I can say that and I can tell you that. And you guys, if you're ever faced with this, it's better to get shot in the head than to get tied up. Because once you're tied up, who knows what's going to happen to you. It could become 3 days of horrible, horrible events. Never get in the car. It's better to get shot in the street corner where everyone sees it than be taken out in the desert. And again, stuff could go on for days and days and days. There's a little asterisk to that, though, which I don't really think about because I'm not in this situation. But if there are kids involved, you may decide to get tied up. His daughter is in the mobile home. As far as he knows, is still in the mobile home. If she was in the mobile home, she got pushed aside when the gun pulled out. She could have ran off to get help, but they don't say her age, but I'm imagining she's fairly young in this story. 7 or 8 or something like that. Normally, like, 16-year-old girls don't run up and hug Uncle Alex, right? I think she's young enough, and they needed a babysitter, so that also make me think they're probably, like, 9 or 10 or younger. So Jimmy decides to let his hands get tied up. Alex then forces Jimmy to be on his feet. So hands are firmly tied behind his back. Jimmy's now standing up. I'm starting to, I don't know why I didn't think about this before, I'm starting to second guess the name I gave him that was not intentional. I just came up with a fake name. Jimmy is not his real name. Alex pulls down Jimmy's pants. We have 2 quotes. All of this information is from the police report. And all of the quotes are paraphrases of what is actually being said. So unless I do this, when I say, quote, "You are not going to die," Alex says, "but you are going to have something to remember this for your whole life. This is normal. You will not die today," unquote. Alex at this point pulls out gloves and a rubber band. Oddly prepared for this. I don't know what the pipe was. I don't know if the pipe, because it doesn't sound like he wanted to do that at all. It might have just been a way to control the situation with violence. If the gun to the head didn't work, I mean, you figured that would be it. Why would you need a 2-foot pipe that would make it hard for you to walk? This was his plan all along. He puts on gloves, he grabs a rubber band, and he begins to put the rubber band onto Jimmy's dick, and then wraps it around again, and again, and again, cutting off circulation. Then Alex pulls out a pair of scissors. I want you to pause if you're still listening to this right now. I want you to go somewhere in your house, not somewhere in your house to cry. I want you to go in your house. I want you to find the sharpest pair of scissors in your house right now. Spoiler alert, they're not that sharp. They're pointy, but they're not that sharp. Now, unless you're like a medical student and you're constantly cutting clothes off of crash victims, I don't know why the medical students do that and not the EMTs. Or, you know, you like a chef with those special like scissors to cut carrots or whatever. Maybe. But like the scissors I use to like cut paper, No way are those sharp enough to do what Alex is going to try to do. He begins to try to cut off Jimmy's dick with a pair of scissors that you would find in your household. And Jimmy is jumping from side to side, hands bound, as the scissors sips, moving through the air and closing right before they cut on his dick. It might get a little bit of a pinch, a little bit of a nick, but Alex is getting frustrated that he can't get them to cut into Jimmy's penis. Listen to this. This passage in the police report boggles my mind. Because I'm not this strong. I don't think I've ever thought I was this strong as Jimmy was. Listen to this. This is from the police report. The victim stated that he tried to move to get away and to not scream because of his children in the house. Could you imagine that? A madman is trying to chop off your dick and you're thinking of your kids. You don't want to terrify your kids. You don't want to be screaming the fear and the terror you feel in your body because you don't want to traumatize your children. I'm not that strong. I would be the loudest man on the planet. They would write songs about me 1,000 years from now. The voice heard round the world had I been in this situation. I'm not that strong to think of kids. I don't have kids, right? So maybe I'd be different, but that boggles my mind. He was trying to be stoic. He's almost accepted what's going to happen. Alex throws Jimmy to the ground, places his knee on Jimmy's chest. The game's over. He's flat on his back. He can't move. Jimmy takes the scissors and starts cutting off Jimmy's dick. Now, you might have thought I was exaggerating when I said that the scissors were dull, that they were just household scissors. You're like, Jason, how do you know? Were there photos of the scissors? The police report states that it was taking a very long time to cut off his dick. He was having to force each cut to make its way through the muscle and the fat. To the point where Alex was getting frustrated. There was blood everywhere. Alex could not believe that it took this long to cut off human genitalia. He's getting frustrated that this isn't already over. It was taking so long that at times Alex would stop cutting and then put the gun to Jimmy's head once again and just hold it there. I can only imagine it was because your hand was cramping, that it was actually getting sore trying to do this. So while he was trying to recover from the cramped hand, he still needed to inflict terror on Jimmy. He'd put the gun to his head. And then he would go back to cutting. Finally, after a few minutes, Alex is able to sever 2/3 of Jimmy's penis. Jimmy is laying there on the ground. His body is shaking. He's going into shock and he's looking down and he sees what's happened. He's trying not to vomit as Alex picks up the dick and is holding it in his hand and says, quote, "Don't act this way." This is not like saying I'm a bad example. Not like saying, oh no, don't act like me. He's saying, don't cheat. Don't cheat. He goes, don't act this way. This is normal. He keeps talking about how what he's doing is normal. It's all normal. He then says, and if you try to call the police, I will be out in 2 months and I will come back and finish this. This might be the most heartbreaking part of the police report. Alex is standing there with the penis severed. He's holding it in his hand. Jimmy is laying on the floor. He's losing a lot of blood. He's going into shock. He can't believe this actually happened. This is the end of the police report. Quote, the victim stated at this point the defendant left. He stated when the defendant opened the bedroom door, his oldest daughter was laying on the ground by the bottom of the door, watching through the crack. Oh, dude. Could you imagine that? I mean, that's just so much to mentally unpack. One, Jimmy, who was trying to be stoic this whole time, as that bedroom door opens, he sees his oldest daughter curled up on the ground. She was watching the whole thing through that little crack in the door. The parts that she couldn't see, her imagination was filling in. And him just looking at her and the heartbreak he must have gone through for her to have seen that. And then that poor girl, like, how would you even process that level of violence at any age? Prolonged torture at any age, let alone 8, 9 or younger. I mean, I'm guessing that door opened and he saw his daughter was watching it. Isn't that awful, man? Whew. They never found the penis. It's gone. They did arrest Alex. He goes, it's normal, man. It's normal. What are you guys talking about? I blacked out. He just recently got sentenced 20 years in prison with, I think, 10 years of parole after that. He's in his 50s. Technically, he shouldn't get out until he's 70, but the way that the justice system works sometimes, he could be out in 5. Who knows? But hopefully not, right? Hopefully not. This sounds very premeditated. The fact that 20 years actually doesn't seem like that long at all, considering how premeditated it was. He brought in the glove. Just the fact that he's bringing the gloves and the rubber bands in, it's not like they got into a fight and he grabbed a pair of scissors and started just trying to snip at it. They never found the penis, though. They can never reattach it. Jimmy, again, we don't know his real name. He said that, you know, because he was married. He was married. He was cheating on his wife as well, but he goes, I can't have sex with my wife anymore. The doctor says you'll never have any sensation down there. He has trouble urinating. He can't really have sex in any traditional way. It's just a story of brutal violence on a sunny Florida afternoon. One man slept with another man's wife, and he got his dick chopped off by a jealous husband. The smart move would have been not to sleep with the woman in the first place. But barring that, when you hurt somebody physically or emotionally, you have to be on the lookout for retribution. If you've done someone wrong, no matter how much you liked them before, or no matter how much you like them afterwards, if you've done somebody wrong, you have to be aware that at any point they can strike against you. They could be hiding that rage under a perfect smile. When you've hurt someone, you cannot trust them. Or as my friend put it, never go to someone's house after you've held their eyeball in your hand. DeadRabbitRadio@gmail.com is going to be our email address. You can also hit us up at facebook.com/DeadRabbitRadio. Twitter is @DeadRabbitRadio. Dead Rabbit Radio is the daily paranormal, conspiracy, and true crime podcast. You don't have to listen to it every day, but I'm glad you listened to it today. Have a great one, guys.